Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Craig Newmark to the broadcast. Craig is best known as the Craig in Craigslist and Craig Connects. He is a self-described nerd, web pioneer, speaker, philanthropist, and advocate of technology for the public good. Craig founded Craigslist in 1995 as an email distribution list to friends featuring local events in the San Francisco Bay Area. It became the almost completely free online classified advertising site that has seen more than 5 billion ads posted. While no longer part of management, Craig continues to work with Craigslist as a customer service representative in what he calls a lightweight capacity. Today, Craig's primary focus is Craig Connects, which he launched in March 2011. The mission of Craig Connects in the short term is to promote and enhance the use of technology and social media to benefit philanthropy and public service. Craig received his bachelor and master's degrees in computer science from Case Western Reserve University. I recently caught up with Craig by phone in his office in the Bay Area, and our discussion covered the genesis of Craigslist, the reasons why he has spurned offers from advertisers and the venture capital community, his philanthropic activities, his personal business ethos, people who were influential to him in his life, his work habits, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Craig Newmark, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I appreciate it.
Pleasure's mine, certainly. Craig, I wanted to talk about really the broad sweep of your career in business and more recently your career and influence in the world of philanthropy. But I thought we'd go back to the genesis of Craigslist and your own kind of upbringing within technology, some of the steps along your journey that led to some of the insights from your perspective and the genesis and creation of Craigslist itself. Can you talk a bit about sort of how the idea occurred to you, what the inspiration was, and what some of those early first steps were in creating it?
Don't give me too much credit. The very first idea was simply the notion that a lot of people had helped me out through the internet. I should give back. And so as a simple form of public engagement, maybe call it civic engagement, what I did was basically to start a simple CC list involving technology and the arts around San Francisco. That was the basic of it, idea, but also I started listening to what people wanted and needed, and I responded to that.
That's great. And obviously, it was an idea that came about at just the right time. It obviously captured the imaginations of people and users in Silicon Valley and then beyond, and then beyond the U.S., in fact. What do you think the kernel of the idea was that led to that growth? What was different about this than other ideas that might be broadly categorized as either competitive or in the same space?
Well, I think people want to work with each other. People are basically good and want to collaborate. And that happened in small numbers at first, but quickly grew. The idea is that people want to connect, and connecting online is a real effective and easy way to do it.
That's great. And one of the things that's often been heralded as a difference in Craigslist is its simplicity, that it's very kind of intuitive, easy to use. You, especially during the time when you were actively involved in the management of the company, you shied away from putting in too many bells and whistles, not worrying necessarily so much about having the most beautiful user interfaces. Can you talk about why simplicity was and ease of use were kind of hallmarks as you thought about developing the interface for the site?
Well, people have for many years in my entire career as a software guy tell me that they want software which is effective, which helps them get through the day, which helps them get their job done. And I just implemented that simple principle at the beginning and have stayed committed to it in all my efforts. The idea is that people often don't want the fancy stuff. They want to get something done and get on with their lives.
I was interested in kind of reviewing some of the history of the organization. You mentioned that in 1997, Microsoft was interested enough to pay for some banner ads. Not long after that, the venture capitalists and bankers began to reach out and suggest significant investments in the site. And unlike a lot of your peers as leaders of technology companies, you shied away from that. And I wonder if you can talk a bit about the rationale in so doing and the advantages in so doing.
There's a number of perspectives on this. For example, around then I reflected that I was a software contractor, you know, making a good living, and, you know, I had enough to take care of myself. I could also provide for my family and stuff like that. So I figure that, you know, people need to get through the day. People need to put food on the table. So people need to get that table, and people need to put that table under a roof. What Craigslist was starting to do was to help people accomplish all that. Specifically, Craigslist then and Craigslist now helps people put food on the table, helps people get a table, and then helps people find a roof under which to put the table. The deal is Craigslist, in that sense, is about people helping each other out. Regarding monetization, well, the usual model of industrial philanthropy is that people might make a great deal of money, and then years later might give back a tiny bit back to the public in the form of, say, a libraries or whatever. I figure if somebody's struggling to put food on the table, they need to keep the cash that they would otherwise pay for advertising.
Very interesting. And I'm wondering also, you live and work, and the firm was founded in the Bay Area, obviously the premier hotbed of technology innovation, many dot-coms across the years of great influence. And oftentimes pontificators about the Bay Area will cynically suggest that one of the key motivations for those who move out there, not unlike the gold rush of two centuries ago, seeking that financial event of some sort. And obviously yours was an organization that offered a different perspective. People obviously, especially since it was clear that that was not what was motivating you, and therefore the organization was not on the path towards a big event, say a public offering or an acquisition, that there clearly there were other things that were motivating them. And I can only imagine it was some of the same mission-oriented aspects that you've already described. But I'd be interested in your own words, sort of as you made the pitch for people to join and as those chose to do so, what did you find were the most meaningful measurements they used in terms of what they hoped to find and what they did find in working at Craigslist?
Well, people saw that we were for real. We were a site that, again, is about helping people help each other with everyday basics. And people were drawn to the company, I feel, because they wanted to be part of something bigger. Now, the mission isn't altruistic. It's just about treating people like you want to be treated. To repeat, it's, you know, grows out of the notion, the observation, that you should treat people like you want to be treated. And that has tremendous appeal to people all over the world. As far as I could tell, that's a universal value, and that's very true in the Bay Area. Sure, there are a lot of people making a lot of money, but that's a relatively small number of people, mostly people here and everywhere else. Again, they want to treat people like they want to be treated, and people want to feel part of something bigger than themselves.
Speaking of which, I think this is a nice segue for CraigConnects.org. Yet another organization that you have founded with that very mission of giving back, using your ideas, using your influence to help a variety of different causes, those related to veterans and military families, women in technology, voting rights, peer-to-peer funding. You've talked about the need for investment and emphasis on worthwhile journalism to ensure that it remains the immune system of democracy. Can you talk a bit about the genesis of CraigConnects.org, the mission of the organization, and why you have chosen what you have chosen in terms of the areas of emphasis?
Well, about 10, 15 years ago, people from nonprofits, sometimes government organizations, you know, they were approaching me to figure out how to apply what I learned at Craigslist to their efforts. Specifically, they wanted to learn a bit about civic engagement, about the use of social media just to connect people for mutual good, And they were pretty interested in that. Sure, there were some who wanted financial contributions, and I'm okay with that. So I just kept doing it, and then doing more of it, and then even more. Several years ago, I realized that I had no idea what I was doing, that I figured I might be supporting 20 or 30 groups. Turns out it was more like 100. And so I got people to help me get my act together. The result was my own personal effort, Craig Connects. And the deal there is to use social media to help people out in the short term while learning how everyone can help each other out in the long term. That is, to help people who are often voiceless, to help them acquire a voice through social media. And I figured I would focus on areas which I thought were personally important to me, or maybe which are bedrock issues underlying everything else. And so I have a team who helps me stand up for really good stuff going on. And that's the biggest part of my life now.
Wonderful. May I ask you a bit more about the team? Like, how have you organized the group? What sorts of skills have you brought in? What sort of technologists are helping you with these sorts of things?
Well, the technology part, that's relatively easy. I have the folks at Rad Campaign who do a lot of my hands-on social media. You know, you'll see that the basic website, if you look under the covers just a little, you know, is a WordPress thing. So the technology is pretty much off the shelf. The hard part has to do with communications. You've read that I'm an old school nerd, grew up in the 50s and 60s, and in the spirit of traditional nerdery, I have no instinct for social convention. I've learned that I can fake social skills, and I can do so tolerably for about 90 minutes at a time, but I need a lot of help from people who really know communications, and that's most of the help that I'm getting. Now that I have an actual foundation set up, sure, I need some accounting help and legal help, and I've got people who are really doing a great job for me, but most of this is about communications. Again, that communications is not only in the short term, you know, helping people out in the here and now, but we're trying to figure out how people of goodwill everywhere can use social media-based communications for the common good.
Can you talk a bit about the way in which you think about social media? Like, which avenues do you use most? Are there ways in which you differentiate the kind of topic that you'll contribute? There's, of course, smaller phrase that you might share. I suppose Twitter would be appropriate, whereas something like One Nerd's Take on the Future of Philanthropy, that was delivered through LinkedIn, which might be better for long form. Are there ways in which you think about how you distribute information when it occurs to you that it's necessary?
Well, social media is just about people talking with each other. Different social media tools are useful in different contexts. I like Twitter for its brevity. You know, I like to repeat the phrase that brevity is the soul of wit. Facebook allows me to communicate with larger numbers of people in long form. LinkedIn is also very good from that point of view. The idea is just to keep up a continuous conversation with people everywhere. Pretty, you know, people of goodwill everywhere. I'm tempted to look into some of the newer forms of communications like the Snapchat, but as I just joked in a small way, the kids are comfortable with using Snapchat. Me, I think I'd have to be about 50 years younger to really get it.
I wanted to talk also about influence. You have become, and in fact, CraigConnects.org is successful because of the influence that you have and because of your success and because you are known and because of the good work that you do. You are naturally a person of influence. I'd like to talk about the people who influenced you. You've mentioned, for instance, that one of the key ideas behind CraigConnects.org is ethical business practices, which you note as treating people the way you'd like to be treated. You've mentioned that a couple of times, as well as philanthropic contributions, which you qualify as sending the elevator back down. I like that analogy. And that it's a reflection of the simple sense of fairness you learned as a kid. Can you talk a little bit about, either personally and professionally, some of the people who've been influential to you and why?
My biggest single influence is the singer and poet Leonard Cohen, because his music reminds me of the values that I learned in Sunday school, but in a practical and effective way. There's other influences as well. There's that, again, Kevin Spacey quote, who's actually quoting Jack Lemmon, about if you're lucky enough to do well, then send the elevator back down, and that encapsulates what I've been doing in a real concise way. There's also other folks who are not internet billionaires, like Jimmy Wales, the co-founder of Wikipedia, and Linus Torvalds, who wrote the kernel, which is the basis of Linux, which is a really big deal in the computer industry and internet industry. I believe he had his 25th anniversary yesterday. And the deal is these are guys, Linus and Jimmy, these are guys who've done tremendous good for the world and have profited from it only in very small ways. That's a really big deal.
Very much in the same model as how you've oriented your practices as well. Can I ask you also how you stay current? You've talked about how there are some emerging technologies that perhaps are more appropriate for people several decades younger than you. But no doubt part of it is simply being in the milieu of Silicon Valley and having reason on a regular basis to speak with people who are shaping the world, especially with the use creatively of technology. Can you talk about what you read, how you stay current, other sort of research that you access in order to make sure that you kind of understand where the world is going from a technology perspective?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things going on at the same time. And frankly, I have a whole bunch of RSS feeds. The deal is that I effectively subscribe to a lot of publications, both technological and not so. Right now, I'm getting a great deal of news via the Washington Post. They're both doing a really good job with technology, keeping things fast and effective. But also, you know, just a couple weeks ago, I had a conversation with Marty Baron, who runs the Post, and I'm really impressed with their journalistic ethics. I feel that I can trust the Washington Post, so that also helps me keep current. The deal is that I read a great deal every day. I still feel like I'm missing some things, because I'm not current regarding the Instagram or the Pinterest or the Snapchat.
Understood. And knowing, of course, that there must not be any average day for you, given the many things that you're involved in, can you talk a bit about how you organize your time, the extent to which that can be briefly described, how you determine what to do on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, how you schedule your time, et cetera?
You're right. It is pretty dependent on the day and what's going on. I mean, typically, I am made to wake up at around 6 or so, and I go through my email, which includes a lot of newsletters. I look at my feeds, Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And even the first thing in the morning, I get through a great deal of what I need to through the day. I might even post a bird picture or two. Today, it's a Western tanager. And then I just start doing what I need to do. Often I have a meeting, in the morning, perhaps a couple of them. Most of my meetings are at my favorite coffee shop, a place called Reverie in my neighborhood. And then I go to the office, keep engaging with people. I'll do some customer service. I'll respond to people talking to me on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, and just get through things. When I get home, in a way, it's more of the same. I get current with things, but I spend time with Mrs. Newmark, and we'll do things together, a lot of which is watching our favorite TV, and I'll just keep current even before I go to bed. In between, I make time for reading, because I read an awful lot of fiction, and I also listen to podcasts.
May I ask who some of your favorite authors of fiction?
It's hard to say because it keeps evolving. And right now I'm reading an excellent novel. Getting a lot of great recognition is Two Like the Lightning, that's T-O-O, Two Like the Lightning by Ada Palmer. I just found it's being featured in Wired Online, and that's been really good. Another recent novel that's been pretty influential for me is called Infomocracy by Malka Elder, that's M-A-L-K-A, Elder, and it tells the story of maybe in a few decades what global governance will be like, because in this vision, what runs the world, it's been divided into a whole lot of micro-democracies, and voting is pretty much done through whatever Google might evolve into. And I do recommend both novels in a big way.
You live and work and have for some time in the Bay Area. As someone who has become such an influential figure within the Bay Area, I'd be interested in your own description of what makes it special. Why is it the place that you've chosen to live, chosen to work? What is it that you think makes it such an attractive place for talented people to choose to live and continue to move to?
I moved to the Bay Area initially thinking that after 40 years, I just wanted to change from the East Coast. Although I note the irony that I just got a place in New York, so I'll be returning part-time.
Got it.
But what's happened with, let's say, the Bay Area, and other areas too, like Seattle, somehow the Bay Area evolved a critical mass of people doing innovative work in communications technology. And once that critical mass was established and observed, it started slowly attracting more and more people, and then more and more people, which is why now I think the dominant industry in the Bay Area is technology and communications technology specifically. That's certainly true of San Francisco, where I'm pretty sure that technology has surpassed tourism as the principal industry of San Francisco.
Well, Craig Newmark, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing a bit about your perspectives and the wide arc of your own personal career, as well as the things that are driving you today. Greatly appreciate your time.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I really appreciate it.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.